Well, Dr. Evelyn Chan is a pediatrician, consultant, and Rhodes Scholar and entrepreneur with a passion for making healthcare patient-centered, sustainable, and equitable. Smiley Scope, where she's founder and CEO, reframes scary medical procedures using positive virtual reality technology. Hi, everyone. I'm David Williams, president of strategy consulting firm Health Business Group and host of the Health Biz Podcast, a weekly show where I interview top healthcare entrepreneurs about their lives and careers. If you like this episode, I really hope that you'll subscribe. Dr. Evelyn Chan, welcome to the Health Biz Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, David.
Well, it's a real pleasure, and your background is fascinating and impressive, as is your company. So they all go together, and I'm looking forward to learning all about it today. Why don't we start back at the beginning? Love to hear like what your childhood was like and any influences from early days that stick with you now.
Yeah, so I grew up in Melbourne, Australia. You can probably hear from my accent. Yeah, that's right. So a migrant family, and they were really trying to establish a new life in Australia. So I grew up pretty much in the pharmacy. My dad had just created his own small business and was really just trying to make ends meet. And so pretty much grew up there, learned how to count, learned how to serve people and be part of a community and understand that sort of initial healthcare experience through that. So that was really powerful for me, working hard, seeing my parents sort of work together and grow a business, and then sort of see how community members really trusted them and asked them a lot of healthcare advice. And so that was something that got me interested in healthcare to start. My brother had autism as well, so that was another key early childhood experience for me, was how do I look after a younger sibling with nonverbal autism, and seeing how he and my parents were navigating the health system, I sort of felt there had to be a better way to do this and make it a better, more personalized experience. So that really set the groundwork for my passion for healthcare, being able to, you know, I love the science of it, and then also sort of bringing that art and personal experience into it.
No, that sounds good. Well, you said I could tell from your accent that you grew up in Melbourne, but the truth is that I know a lot of people in South Africa, and I always had a hard time figuring out the difference between an Australian accent and a South African accent, which I know are different, but I felt a little better once I found out a few years later that these people that I knew in Australia were from South Africa originally. So no wonder I was confused, as they moved when they were adults. So anyway, so it's obvious that you're not from Boston. Let's just put it that way. From how you speak. That's about it. So then education wise, I saw a big impressive list, punctuated by Rhodes Scholarship somewhere in there. And I saw you're actually active with the Rhodes Foundation after that. But what was your educational path after high school?
So I went straight into medicine as an undergraduate. I was really passionate about pursuing healthcare. And from there, went into pediatrics training. And so had some really fascinating experiences. Absolutely loved my time working with patients, but also wanted to see the bigger picture and how we could really translate, you know, all this research that had been done. How do we get that to the bedside as fast and as innovatively as possible? And so that led me to Oxford, where I studied medical anthropology and public health, to really understand how could we kind of look at those nuances and challenges to really try and overcome them to have successful implementation in healthcare.
How does I'm somewhat familiar with the Rhodes Scholarship process, at least in the U.S. My faculty advisor at Wesleyan was the North American Secretary of the Rhodes Trust at the time, and he encouraged me to apply for Rhodes Scholarship, which I thought was, he claimed to be serious that I might get one, but I wasn't close, I don't think. But what was the process like for you? Did you know about it? Did you get recruited for it? How did it come about?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit less formal in Australia. I mean, essentially, I didn't know a lot about the Rhodes. And for me, it was searching for a different group of people who could give some interesting advice and perspective. I never dreamed to get a Rhodes. And it was really about, can I write a personal statement, figure out where I want to be in 20 years' time, and speak to people outside medicine who could really kind of provide different perspectives on their pathway. And so it was a complete shock to me. To have the opportunity to go over there. I had terrible imposter syndrome and probably still do. but what I learned in my 2 years over there was that, you know, we were just exposed to the most amazing group of people who were really driven and passionate about making a positive impact in the world. And that was really that kind of overarching, experience that I saw.
Outstanding. Now, I was trying to trace where you went from there because I saw something about being a gymnastics coach. How does that fit in?
Yeah, so I actually did that through my teenage years. So I was a very avid gymnast, not the best gymnast, but okay. I absolutely loved the sport growing up. And then actually had a really bad accident when I was 12. So fractured my neck, wasn't able to really compete in the sport anymore, but absolutely loved it. So continued on coaching. And what I love about gymnastics is, you know, always learning new skills. It's not just about getting faster. It's always about learning something new, that balance of power and flexibility and mental and physical strength. And very literally learning how to fall over and over again and do that safely, which I think, you know, you do literally. And then now I do figuratively every day.
Yeah, wonderful. So then in terms of job-wise before Smiley Scope, what did you do work-wise?
Yeah, so from being a gymnastics coach and a pharmacy assistant, I then became a doctor. I trained at a number of different hospitals, including the Royal Children's in Melbourne, where I was a pediatric trainee there. And then after the Rhodes, moved to the Boston Consulting Group.
Great. Now I saw that's I think where we weren't there at the same time, but one of your board members is one of my classmates, Jim Maritan. He's a good guy, so good job for picking him. Now I don't want to be offended, but you were not at Boston Consulting Group for that long. So what was your experience like there, and what caused you to move on?
Yeah, so I absolutely love my time there, and I think at BCG I was with, what really surprised me was I was with some really smart people who'd been trained in vastly different ways. And so we had incredibly rich debates, perspectives, and, you know, trying to solve problems. You know, you can sort of really see it move from that problem to a very rich and interesting solution. And I absolutely love my time there. What I learned was, firstly, amazing people, surround yourself with them, surround yourself with smarter people than yourself and people who see different perspectives. And then I learned going up that learning curve of a different industry was something that I could do. Before, I thought in medicine, which you just study very deeply, I wasn't sure if I could do that. And that really set me up very much for Smiley Scope. So I wasn't really looking for a new role with Smiley Scope, but during my time at BCG, was working with a client who was one of the early players in virtual reality. And when I tried on the VR headset, I thought, wow, this could be, you know, really applicable to healthcare. And I hadn't seen a lot of applications. And so I was fascinated by that, started working on it in my weekends and my magic time, we call it at BCG.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then it just got too big. So it became something that was almost a full-time job. So took a little bit of a leave of absence and sort of thought, look, it's going to be now or never that healthcare and virtual reality are really going to become an important trend. You know, BCG will hopefully take me back if I needed to. So that's kind of where it's been. And I've had an amazing group of BCG supporters, you know, and advisors who have continued as we've grown the company.
So, Evelyn, it sounded like, you know, you had this client experience and you realized there's the aha that VR needs to play in healthcare. And, of course, you have had a lot of experience in healthcare. What did you see as particularly kind of the unmet need? I mean, other than like a consultant could say, okay, here, VR is playing a big role here, but not here, so let's bring it here. But what from your experience, you know, had you seen that said, wow, that would have been great to have, you know, this kind of technology in your practice, for example?
Yeah, so what really excited me about virtual reality was how immersive and interactive it was. Instantly, when you try VR on, you can see from a medical healthcare perspective how it could really help with simulation and education. You know, and it already had been used in, you know, practicing for emergency situations for the clinician side, but I thought that the patient side had really been a bit underdone at that point. And so I could see how powerful it could be for patients to really understand their disease and condition, and how could you then modify that to then make it a more positive experience so they could be better manage their health. That obviously is a really complex thing.
Yeah.
And it was obviously with every patient being quite different, it is hard to tailor that for each patient. So what we chose to do was say, let's bite off something that's really tangible and is a really consistent problem that we see in pediatrics. So that first thing that came to mind was needle procedures. Every time a child sees me as a pediatric doctor, they ask, you know, do I need to have a shot or a blood test today? They're just petrified of that one thing. And so it was about how do you reframe that experience and make it a positive one so that it makes it better for the patient so that they're not traumatized, you know, 10 years or 20 years on and don't actually turn up to the doctor? And how do we make it a faster and more positive experience for the clinician as well? And so that's really how Smileyscope's first idea started, was it was a very basic, how do we address needle pain and fear?
Got it. So I saw the video that you have on your site that that shows what it's like from the perspective of the child. Can you talk through kind of what the technology and offering is, maybe related to virtual reality that people might be familiar with in their own, you know, gaming or other situations they've seen it?
Yeah, so I suppose virtual reality, when we think of it from a gaming perspective, is you've got kind of like an Oculus headset, which you put on yourself, you scroll through all these different libraries and you choose a game or something to do. What we noticed very quickly in healthcare is that obviously, firstly, it needed to be healthcare compatible. It had to be wipeable, easy to use, and something that it didn't mean that the clinician had to put it on first and then give it to the patient.
Yeah.
So there were a couple of things that we knew we needed to address with our technology. So we've actually created a really simple touch screen so the clinician can quickly select it rather than having to put on the VR headset themselves. And it takes less than 2 minutes to really learn how to use it. From the patient perspective, we noticed that, you know, a lot of when you try on an Oculus, they go on a distraction or teleportation to somewhere else, right? So you go lie on a beach or you go swim with whales or something like that. And in a healthcare environment, when you're doing a procedure, you don't want the patient to be so removed from the procedure that they're surprised and they move their arms when you're trying to put in that needle. And so what we did was actually create a unique patented technique called procedural choreography, where we can synchronize what happens in the VR with what's happening in the real world and reframe it. So a very concrete example of that is those fish that come in and nibble in VR when we're putting in the needle. And through that synchronization, it means that the patient can stay still. They're still involved in the procedure, but they can reframe and think about it in a different way. So that's kind of how we're really different in VR.
What does it feel like, you know, from the patient perspective to do that? I know I have had the experience of taking one of my kids who has chronic illness, needed to go to the phlebotomist all the time, which we have here in Boston. And then would say that, you know, my child was the only one, you know, after like 20 screaming kids, my kid would just sit there and actually look at the arm and just watch it and was fine with it. But that's not the norm. What is it like, you know, sort of for different age groups, and, you know, how does it actually seem? Is it just sort of distracting them? Because I remember, you know, we had a very good pediatrician, and you'd lie down and he'd say, look at the birdie, and he'd flip it around and people would look, and he would, you know, have time to do at least an injection. It wasn't necessarily, you know, placing an IV or anything like that. But what is it really like, and how does it change things for that patient?
Yeah, so the great thing is for the patient, it does look just like a distraction. It's really simple and it's intuitive. So kids will look around, they'll get engaged and excited about it. But what on the back end is that we've actually weaved about 24 different best practices in, ranging from, you know, deep breathing and psychological reframing, all the way through to sort of CBT and all these different other practices to really optimize so that you can treat different patients that might be more amenable to certain ways of talking or presenting or being able to feel pain in different ways. So
if you have, let's say, a patient that goes and experiences this, and, you know, it's much less traumatic and they're not scared away 20 years later, and then what happens if they become, you know, used to that? Let's just give my child's example, where they would go, let's say, for a weekly blood draw, and then they're maybe somewhere else that doesn't have this this technology. What is it like? Is it even worse to go and get that procedure at a place that doesn't have the Smileyscope?
No, the great thing is we've got the technology that's built in that best practice. So the next time you have it, you can then reimagine the fish. You can think about it differently. It doesn't have the same visual immersive you know, qualities than as you do in VR, which when you're in that kind of fight and flight response, when you're really scared of a needle, you often do need some additional prompts to be able to help support. But we've had plenty of children who have then reported back to us and said, look, we didn't have a Smileyscope this time, but we still had a fantastic experience and we were able to use those skills to have a better healthcare experience.
So, you know, I think with any business, when you're getting it started, you need to be focused, even if there's this great platform opportunity that goes beyond that. So the needle thing, I think, is pretty clear and also is pretty widespread. So it's a niche in a sense, but it's widespread. Everybody has that in their experience and could be the gateway to a lot more, because if you're scared away from the doctor's office and you don't go for that, you don't have whatever else is needed as well. But what do you see going beyond the needle procedures, and where are you as a company?
That was a really exciting thing, was once we did our clinical trial and we were taking the equipment away, the emergency department physicians were saying, hang on, can you keep it here? We're happy to pay for it. We've been actually borrowing the device and using it for all sorts of other things. So they were using it for suturing wounds and dressing changes and, supporting children when they were doing plaster casts, putting them on and off, x-rays, a really wide range of procedures that were painful or anxiety provoking. And so we started working on how do we develop specific use cases and expand that both in terms of the procedures in the hospital that are done and also the age groups. So now we have over 25 different VR experiences, and we cover from, children as young as 3 or 4 all the way through to adulthood.
Great. Okay. And so where is this deployed? How, to what extent have you gotten beyond the clinical trials, or is it still in the trial stage?
Yeah, so we're now commercial. We've been working on the sort of commercial launch for about 18 months in Australia, and we're in 100% of Australian children's hospitals and about 60 to 80 hospitals around Australia. And in the US, we launched probably at the turn of this year, and we're working with 20 of the top 30 children's hospitals in the US.
Great. So, as I think about what's happened during the global health emergency, with just the overall level of anxiety that's out there, not even if it's not connected even to a needle procedure, but just compared to just waking up and thinking about what's going in the world or walking down the street, does a Smileyscope or your kind of associated technology have any role beyond sort of like a specific procedure with a needle or some other kind of, something that could be traumatic on its own? Is there a broader application? Because you mentioned CBT, for example.
Yeah, there certainly is with the technology. So on our platform, we do have a number of meditations and relaxing experiences as well that we've built in pretty much from demand from clinicians themselves who will use it on their coffee breaks, because it has been a very stressful time during the pandemic, and also long stay patients and palliative care patients. So we have done that to expand out a bit more broadly.
And are those long stay and palliative care patients, are those adult populations, or are you talking about pediatric as well?
It's been both.
Yeah. So what have you, what have you learned by, coming from the Australian market, where it sounds like you're pretty well penetrated, and then taking a pretty well-trod, course going from Australia, which is a big country, but a small population, to the US, which is a huge market. What are the things that you sort of expected, and what are the things that you didn't expect but found out anyway, or still finding out?
Yeah, I think the fundamental thing is that pain and anxiety is a universal need that needs to be addressed. And so around the world, patients are still scared of needles. Clinicians still need some great solutions to be able to help alleviate pain and particularly procedural care. In terms of some of the new things that we learned, I think that one of the big things is that there is much more specialization in the US healthcare clinical workforce. And so, as a pediatrician in Australia, I've done a lot of the procedures myself and have high familiarity with those. But what we found was in the US, your pediatrician who's making the medical decisions may not have done many procedures before. Because there's someone like a physician assistant or nurse who does those procedures themselves. And so that has been a little bit of a trying, you know, you've got an extra person or extra stakeholder to bring into the picture. And there are sort of also further specialties like child life specialists, right, who are more prevalent in the US as well. So I think it's about navigating a more complex stakeholder management plan to be able to find the way to secure contracts within hospitals. Yeah. But at the end of the day, you know, we still have the same really positive responses from patients and clinicians.
Well, I won't put words in your mouth, but I know the child life specialist one always throws people off when they get to the US. And I'll just say, not necessarily for SmileyScope, but for some other innovations, the child life specialist can actually feel threatened, because it is an extra sort of layer of support for pediatric patients. And they say, oh, wait a minute, you know, this is what I'm doing already with my techniques. So I don't know if you've had that experience, but I've seen it with hospital clowning, for example, which they don't have child life specialists outside of the US, but here we do.
Yeah, that's right.
Talk about the business model a little bit. So, and this sounds great, you know, and as a patient or the parent of a patient, I could well imagine that it would be a positive. It might get me to go to one, you know, hospital over another. But, you know, beyond that, who's paying you? What's their basis to be able to pay you? How does it all work together?
Yeah, so with our business model, there are really two prongs to it. The first that we're currently going through is a subscription-based model. So SmileyScope is purchased by the provider as a license, and they can use SmileyScope's hardware and software as many times as they'd like on any patient and procedure. And that's the great thing, is we're really driving adoption and being that first line of care for procedural pain management. Secondly, we're really starting to build in some reimbursement. So there's been a strong push for digital therapeutics and being able to offer sort of drug-free therapies as first line where possible, safe and effective. And so we're starting to see reimbursement for these types of technologies and increasing appetite from payers and providers. So that's kind of the second part of our business model. We'll then be able to, you know, work on reimbursement as well.
So you would be able to position yourself as a digital therapeutic, it sounds like.
That's right. That's the plan.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting because I sometimes look at digital therapeutics that might be a substitute for a conventional pharmaceutical product. And you say, yeah, the concept is the same, but like, is that really something that, you know, should be reimbursed and can really compete? Or is it really just one flavor of CBT wrapped in another box? But I can see here where you're actually doing, it's a complement to procedure. You could almost say it's analogous to like an antiemetic in a surgery, where, you know, someone's going to have nausea as part of the procedure, and so you'd administer something with that. And this could be something analogous. But is that the right way to look at it?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. What we see from a lot of clinicians is they say, look, now that we offer SmileyScope as first-line therapy, we're actually finding that we're not having to sedate patients as often, we're not needing to give gas anesthetic or opioids as often. And so that's a really powerful thing when you kind of accumulate that through the hospital and all the departments and cases that we see. So I think that digital anesthetic concept is really interesting and something that we're building on.
So a related area, you know, that people are fearful of, but I don't know how it would work with your approach, is dentistry. Is that an area that you participate in or look at?
It's certainly one that comes up quite a bit. Yeah. No one likes going to the dentist. So it's something we've tested a little bit. It's still early days for us, yeah, but we've been working with the Special Olympics dental and medical checks in Texas. And so there've been some really positive results there. We would have to modify some of our technologies to make sure the patient was really still, yeah, for that. But yeah, it's certainly a possibility.
Yeah, good. What else is on the roadmap that you might be able to talk about? If you look out ahead 3 or 5 years, I'm not sure what the time frame is. How would you see SmileyScope evolving?
Yeah, I can see SmileyScope as a digital therapeutic that's really pioneering that, you know, balance between, you know, do we need to sedate a patient or can we avoid that, which is incredibly exciting. And what we're seeing is really clinicians are taking this movement and running with it in very different ways. So some examples would be that we've got an OBGYN clinical trial started up in IUD insertion, and other painful procedures in the gynae space. And in reproductive health, we've got just kicked off a clinical trial for vasectomy pain management as well. So there's some really interesting ways that we're going to be able to broaden Smileyscope's application in the adult procedural space. And then, as you've kind of alluded to, chronic pain and other areas are also really important and on our radar, and our patented technology could be really powerful.
Great. And what have you done for fundraising?
So we're currently finalizing our seed prime round. And so that's a $7 million round, and about 60% will go towards sales and marketing and expansion in the US. And the remainder will go towards regulatory reimbursement and expansion into adults.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounds great. And it sounds like you've made great progress to still be at the seed stage from a financing standpoint. So congratulations on that. I want to just ask you a last question about whether, with all that you're doing here, have you had a chance to read any books? And is there anything that you would recommend to our viewers and listeners?
Yeah, so I suppose on the technology side, I've been reading Neuromancer. William Gibson was written in 1984, but it has some really startling, accurate predictions of hacking and cybersecurity and VR and AI. It's fascinating. Many of the areas of technology that we're grappling with today. So I'd recommend that. And Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman.
Great. Sounds good. All right. Well, those are both good books. I thought Thinking Fast and Slow is recommended by a recent guest, and I've read that one. Neuromancer I've heard of, and I didn't read it in 1984 when it came out, but I'll have to put it on my list and pick it up a little bit later. Well, Dr. Evelyn Chan, CEO of Smileyscope, I want to say thank you so much for joining me today on the Health Biz Podcast.
Great. Thanks so much for having me, David.
You've been listening to the Health Biz Podcast with me, David Williams, President of Health Business Group. I conduct in-depth interviews with leaders in healthcare, business, and policy. If you like what you hear, go ahead and subscribe on your favorite service. While you're at it, go ahead and subscribe on your second and third favorite services as well. There's more good stuff to come, and you won't want to miss an episode. If your organization is seeking strategy consulting services in healthcare, check out our website, healthbusinessgroup.com.